This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. What's the Durham County Jail doing to protect its inmates during the pandemic? Research shows us the coronavirus spreads more quickly when people are indoors and spend lots of time together, conditions that are hard to avoid in jails. Durham County Sheriff Clarence Burkhead joins us now to talk about how he is adapting policies to keep COVID-19 at bay. Sheriff Burkhead, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you very much. Really happy to be here with you today.
It's good to talk with you. Tell us how things are going right now on the ground at the Durham County Detention Facility.
Right now, things are really going well. And what I mean by that is we have begun testing. And so far, we have tested over 291 detainees. And 220 employees. And as of this past Friday, we have zero positive cases of COVID. And this was our plan in August when we had our first outbreak. We had those two detainees who tested positive. We immediately went into our testing strategy, which is something we have been planning for since March. And moving forward, we will continue to test both detainees and employees on a two-week basis to make sure if we have someone who comes up positive, we can jump on further mitigation strategies, isolation, quarantine, and get those individuals identified as quickly as possible.
Now, you said your first outbreak, you mentioned August. There was one in April, though, right, in which eight detention officers tested positive. In fact, I believe one died.
Right. We had our first inmate or detainee outbreak in August. We had, unfortunately, several employees, eight to be exact, who have tested positive over the past 6 months. And one of them, as you mentioned, did succumb to the virus. We think that was communal transmission, but that's because we didn't have any cases in the facility at that time. And it was unfortunate that we lost Senior Detention Officer Alexander Petaway very early on into this virus. And we've been taking it very serious from day one. Even prior to our first case here in North Carolina, my team was on the phone with King County Sheriff's Office in Seattle, talking to them about their mitigation strategies and what was happening there so we could really start formulating our plan.
Let's talk about those, because I know you've been busy and I know you've been at it right from the start. What are the policies that you were able to put in place to prevent the spread?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, most your listeners will know that we limited our visitation, and actually we went into a lockdown mode very early on. We've since relaxed that, but basically we have limited in-person visits. We've increased our digital visits using video visitation and telephone calls, making sure that family members can stay connected with those who are incarcerated, and also attorneys can stay in touch with their clients. We immediately implemented temperature checks, screening, health questionnaire for everyone who's coming into the facility. New arrestees are isolated for 14 days and monitored by our in-house health care provider prior to going into general population. We've been very fortunate. Most of those individuals have been able to be released prior to going into general population because of some of our pre-release strategies we're working with CJRC and the DA's office, and then making sure that everyone has their PPEs. The last thing I'll say is that our population is low and has been for this entire year, and that allows us to house inmates in single cells. We can practice as much social distancing as possible because of our low average daily population number, and that has really helped us. And again, we've set up a couple of pods where we can isolate and quarantine those individuals and make sure that no one coming in is testing positive for COVID.
You had mentioned maybe part of that is because of the pretrial release that you've been working on. That's been an adjustment with Criminal Justice Resource Center and the DAs. How about, there were some other changes that we heard about, which is instead of making arrests to keep the jail population low, there would be citations rather than arrest. How much of that has taken place, and how much of that may be responsible for your lower senses?
Some of that has certainly contributed to our lower senses, Frank. But unfortunately, as you know, we continue to experience unprecedented violent crime in Durham. Our gun violence is up, and we are working with laser focus trying to go after those individuals who are committing those crimes. So in cases where we are able to issue citations, we certainly have done so. So I would say that the contribution is small, but nonetheless significant in the grand scheme of things. But going after those violent offenders is something that we are constantly doing.
And the pretrial release, you know, it's interesting how this coincides with the movement to end bail. And I wonder to what extent we're seeing the possibility or an almost a test of whether or not we can reform our bail or end our bail system just through this process created by the necessity and the emergency of the COVID system. Are you finding that things are working out? You're releasing people and they're showing up for trial?
By and large, yes. I think it's working. And I certainly support bail reform. I think there needs to be every system we have needs to be evaluated on its merits, particularly in this environment. So I think it has helped that we have a very good pretrial release program here in Durham, and we work closely with the folks at CJRC, and we work close with Muffin and her group, whom you had on a couple of months ago talking about bail reform. So we are very involved and supportive of those programs, and I think they are having a positive impact.
Now let's take a look, too. It's at a closer look at some of the cases that we've had during the COVID-19 outbreak. Recently, there are reports of a 59-year-old man, Daryl Wayne Kersey, who contracted COVID-19 at the Durham County Jail after being in the facility for 8 months, tested positive in August, died in September 16th, but was transferred to state custody and apparently not reported either by the county or by the state as a COVID case, a COVID death in state custody, lost in the transfer. Can you tell us more about that case and why, for instance, he would not have been reported as a death from the county system because he had, in fact, contracted COVID-19 in the jail?
Well, the state, as you know, not every jail, but several jails across the state of North Carolina will house state prisoners due to the backlog situation. And certainly when COVID impacted our state system in the severe way that it did, we certainly would step up and help our state partners. And this case was a backlog case, so he was sentenced to state prison. We were holding him in a backlog status. Unfortunately, when he contracted COVID, about 2 days later, he was transferred to the hospital. And we, the Durham County Sheriff's Office, continued to maintain security of him while the state was working out the extended release program. And that's simply so his family could visit with him in the hospital and not have to go through us to get permission. And that's the way it works. So technically, he was a state prisoner, and it would be inappropriate for me to comment on any status or any medicals related to a state prisoner, because that's their responsibility.
Well, but it didn't happen because we didn't hear from the state either, and so it didn't get reported. Does that need to be, there are some real transparency issues then that are revealed through this case. Do we need to change the way we do the reporting? Because there's going to be this cooperation, because you're going to be handling state inmates at your jail, do we need to have some better reporting policies in place to ensure credibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's always room for improvement. And we're always going to be respectful of certainly one's privacy rights as it relates to their incarceration status and certainly their medical status. And, as we're bound by HIPAA, as is the state, but I think there's always going to be room for improvement when communicating with local officials or state officials, and how we get this information out in a more timely fashion. So we're constantly in conversation with the Department of Public Safety, those officials at Department of Corrections, and certainly our local officials, to keep them informed as much as possible. So
right, because we know that HIPAA doesn't at all restrict, you know, applying numbers and cases.
That's right.
Sort of thing. So they can, you know, when it goes on the, you know, the reporting schedule, we could see that as another case. But let me talk about something else, because we've heard concerns from the community about members from the community about using lockbacks, keeping inmates essentially locked up to keep them apart, to keep them safe. On the one hand, on the other hand, it does restrict the time they have outside of their cell. Are lockbacks still being used? Is that still part of the policy?
No, it's not. As I mentioned a moment ago, our census is low that we can bunk individuals in single cells, and we also still follow the same schedule for rec time, day room time, library time. All of that is being managed just in smaller numbers. So no, we're not in a lockback status as it relates to internal operations. We still have the facility on limited visitation. Again, we just don't want people coming and going. Again, we're trying to keep the virus out of the facility. But internally, we're operating as normal as possible, because we know that the virus is still around. We know that it is still highly contagious. So we're still wearing our PPEs. Inmates, detainees, all are issued PPEs, but they are able to go to the library and get their rec time and be as normal as possible while still inside the facility.
Well, I'm talking to Durham County Sheriff Clarence Burkhead. Now I'd like to bring in someone who's been researching how jails across the state are responding to the pandemic. Felicia Arriaga is an assistant professor of sociology at Appalachian State University. Felicia, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
As someone who's looking at this statewide, how would you compare, and what's your response to what's happening in Durham and what you're seeing across the state?
Sure. And it's great to hear, I think, some of the proactive and mitigation strategies that Sheriff Burkhead is employing. I think one of the biggest questions for me whenever we started this research was whether or not there was some kind of statewide directive to do any of these particular things. And so I think now, in touching base with at least the Sheriff's Association and a few additional folks at the state level, we're not quite seeing that. So I think some of the questions that I still have and concerns are really about sort of this county-by-county decision-making process that is happening, which I think in certain cases also means that the reporting may not be similar. I think some of the reports that we're getting from community members at this point, especially since the last time we were on the show, are really highlighting, I think, some of the potentially non-reporting that's happening to the state level.
Let me stop you there and talk about that. I mean, where do you sense the non-reporting, or where are you getting just not enough information?
Sure. So, after we spoke on the last time, we've had some community members from Alamance County as well as from Bladen County reach out to us and other community members that we're in touch with to talk about some of the testing that has been done there. I don't know if you've seen the latest numbers that were reported to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, but at least for Alamance County last week, there was 113 cases, I believe, and this week there are none. So I'm hopeful that the cases have been resolved and that folks have been able to contain the outbreak. But I think with little information coming out of that particular sheriff's office, we don't quite know what's going on. And I think that that's the concern for community members who have contacted us. In Bladen County, I think a similar case of some individuals writing that they were tested for COVID, especially during the summer. And I've been keeping track of all of the statewide reports that are going to the Department of Health and Human Services, and I don't actually see any of that reporting reflected there. So it is often that I think that people who are incarcerated may not necessarily have access to reporters or access to actually make these kinds of complaints, or at least like make these things known to people. And so it's opened up for us another possibility to really hear from people who are incarcerated and also trying to at least triangulate or use some of the information from the state level to see what's going on at the same time.
And the last time we spoke was in early September. So what are you hearing, though, from the sheriffs themselves in those counties? Because as you say, there's no uniform statewide policy. So you're getting these various kinds of reporting, different numbers, different ways of even answering the questions. Is there some front? I mean, how are they responding to that? Would they rather see more? I mean, sometimes folks don't like to hear from the top. On the other hand, sometimes the guidance can be helpful. What are you hearing around the state?
Sure. And I think that that's right, especially I think with sheriffs and other sort of issues when it comes to sheriffs and what they would like to do and would like not to do. That's very clear, right, that they want to be able to have that autonomy to do this. And so what we've heard is we didn't necessarily hear much around sort of the emphasis to report, because when we first started collecting, we didn't actually know that the reporting would start to happen at the state level. So we were sort of asking these questions before that part of the reporting even started. And so in our next round, we will be asking a follow-up question on whether or not they would like to do some more reporting, would like to sort of hear some more ways that they can share policies across the board. But we also had some sheriffs respond back to us exactly, I think, the conversation that you and Clarence Burkhead just had, Sheriff Burkhead just had about the issues with HIPAA. So we did have some agencies respond back to us that this is privileged information, both for employees and for folks who are incarcerated. And so we actually didn't get any information from some offices about their actual numbers of cases that work that they had either tested for within staff as well as the folks who were incarcerated.
Sheriff Burkhead, I'm wondering what kind of communication you've had with other sheriffs around North Carolina and how they're handling COVID-19, and whether or not there's any kind of collaboration. What are you hearing, and what sorts of collaborative efforts are underway?
No, that's a great question, and this is something that we have talked about at great length at the association and with my colleagues one-on-one. And you're correct. Everyone is sort of handling it differently based on their own jurisdiction and practices and relationships with public health. But we're encouraging everyone, and I know the Sheriff's Association is encouraging all of the sheriffs to be very proactive in keeping the virus out of the facility and certainly working with public health. Like here in Durham, we have a great relationship with public health. Our director, Mr. Rodney Jenkins, he and his staff have been in lockstep with us from day one. Immediately when we had our outbreak, our first two cases of detainees, we were on the phone with public health, who was on the phone with state DHHS folks. But that's the protocol. So we've been following the state protocol since day one, and most of my colleagues are following that same procedure. Certainly, with all the mitigation strategies we talked about a moment ago, we've been doing that. But I think the communication now is catching up with us, and everyone's trying to be as transparent as possible while still protecting confidentiality. But we've relied heavily on public health to get the numbers out, not releasing any specifics, of course, and that's worked great for us here in Durham.
Well, I want to thank you both for being on the program today. Durham County Sheriff Clarence Burkhead, Appalachian State University sociology professor Felicia Arriaga. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you very much.
North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.